All right, Cuse Nation, welcome to the Upstate Orange Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube. I'm Jim Sinacropi, back live inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York, on Sunday evening, March 6, 2016. We'll be talking about a rough week in Orange Country after two losses on the road at UNC and Florida State. We'll reevaluate our NCAA resume and, as usual, some great Orange basketball trivia. The Upstate Orange Podcast is brought to you through support from Generations Bank, with locations in Auburn, Farmington, Geneva, Phelps, Seneca Falls, Union Springs, and Waterloo. Be sure to check out their mobile banking app or visit them online at mygenbank.com. Well, I'd like to welcome into the show right now via telephone in Cincinnati, Ohio, the professor Brad Connor. Brad, welcome to the show.
Jim, happy Sunday evening.
Yeah, here we are again, and we talked last week about, we predicted they might lose to UNC and beat Florida State. Well, they lost to them both by five, both winnable games, and now we are playing against Pitt in the ACC tournament, and it's just the outlook is bleak, where if they just would have won that game against Florida State, let's say, you know, we're looking at a little bit higher NCAA seed. We're not playing Pitt in the first round of the ACC tournament. So it's just been a real bad week for Syracuse, I guess, better than last year this time when we weren't even going to the tournament. That was pretty depressing. At least now we got a shot at it. A reason to watch Selection Sunday, but not a good week, Brad.
No, not exactly the week we were hoping for. I don't think we were too surprised at the result down at Chapel Hill, but yesterday was a rough one. That's not one we would have expected. That's a game Syracuse usually has the better of Florida State, and boy, it did not look like the better team for much of any of that game, really.
Yeah, and that was disappointing, but I guess we can get right to it with our big five topics of the week here. And I want to start it off with something that we've talked about over and over again, but, you know, Trevor Cooney had the ball in his hands at the end of that Florida State game at the top of the key with a wide-open three to complete our comeback. You know, like I said all year, that guy's just been a run stopper, and now he's got a chance to pretty much get in the good graces of all Cuse Nation and make the big shot, wide-open shot. This guy's supposedly a great shooter. And, of course, he doesn't come through, and of course he misses it, and I don't think he's going to make it in that situation in the ACC tournament or the NCAA tournament. I just, you know, personally, the guy was, hold on just a second here, Brad. Cooney was 4-for-16 from the field and 2-for-10 from three against Florida State and 3-for-11 from the field against North Carolina. And, you know, so that's a grand total of 7-for-27. And, you know, when is it time to tell Cooney to stop shooting the ball altogether? I mean, I can appreciate all the other stuff he does and all the hustling if he didn't shoot the ball so much, you know, and I'm sick of it. He's not the type of shooter that's, oh, he's a great shooter, he's just got to keep shooting. No, he's not a great shooter. So I don't know if you agree with me, if you're frustrated. What were you thinking when Cooney rose to take that shot at the top of the key at the end of that Florida State game with a chance to tie?
Well, I'll tell you what I did think and what I did say. And I'm watching this game with my 12-year-old son, who has probably as much basketball knowledge as anyone around. And we joked, they were down three, got the ball, and the announcer said, "You don't need a three right now," because it was 17 seconds, I think, when they got the ball.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They got down, got a two, and he says to me, "Well, if Cooney's getting it, you know he's launching a three."
Yeah, right.
And sure enough, they inbounded it to Cooney, and what does he do? With 12 seconds left, he launches a three. Number one, you don't need that shot, and number two, you don't need that shot then. But that's the guy. Boy, if he gets the ball in his hand, there's one thought in his head, and it's not, "Hey, I'm going to try and find the open guy for a layup." Are you kidding me? He's going to shoot it up whether it's there or not. He was going to pull it from 30 if he had to. He pulled up from, you know, 22. Decent look, but again, right there, you know, Benajay fouled out, so that was unfortunate. But he's the third option, legitimately. And when Benajay's in, he's the fourth option. And if anybody doesn't see that after this season and after these 4 years, you're crazy. Lydon is a better three-point shooter than he is. Richardson is a better three-point shooter than he is. Benajay, if he was in, would have been a better three-point option than Trevor Cooney. And hell, maybe Tyler Roberson might have been a better three-point shooter, although he airballed one from about 12 feet earlier in the game. But there's no confidence at all in any Syracuse fan. I can't imagine when the ball comes out of Trevor Cooney's hands.
And we can see that, but why doesn't Jim Boeheim see that?
I don't know. He's a fifth-year guy. Maybe he shrugs his shoulders and like, that's what we've got, sink or swim. I don't know how you make the Hall of Fame if that's your attitude and you don't recognize what your best options are and you play the odds in a situation like that. Then you say, look, I appreciate what you can do for us, but I don't want the ball in your hands right now. I want the ball in Malachi Richardson's hands. I want him to be able to do a step-back three because he can make the step-back three as much as Trevor Cooney can make a wide-open three.
Yeah, I know, and Trevor, he was wide open, and I'm thinking to myself, I always have a little bit of confidence that, this is going to be where he turns it around. He's going to make this big shot. So now we go into the postseason. Really, to be honest with you, Syracuse can't win basketball games, especially six in a row when somebody's on the court going, 2 of 12 and 4 of 14, whatever, those numbers I just said, those shooting numbers. The team's not going to win when you got a player shooting that much and making that little. So it's really going to come down to if can he possibly get hot and salvage his entire Syracuse career, over the next 4 weeks. And confidence level is low, like you said.
He took 16 shots in that game yesterday. He missed 12. That's more than anybody even took, with the exception of Benajay, who took 13 shots. That's crazy. How there's not anybody on that staff that's like, look, you got to dial it back a little bit. You're not on. And he hasn't been on for a month. He hasn't had a really good game.
Since at North Carolina. Since at North Carolina, right? Was that the last one where he had a good game shooting?
Home North Carolina, I think.
Yeah, that's what I meant, home North Carolina. First time we played North
Carolina. Yeah, at North Carolina, he was terrible again, 3 for 11.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, I guess it gets tiresome to talk about, but when he's the guy out there with the ball in his hand and a chance to, tie a game where you've just mounted a 9-point comeback in less than a minute, and he can cap it off and he's your fifth-year senior, then, it's tough not to talk about it. But it seems like we talk about it every single week. One of these top five topics has to do with, Cooney doing something crazy or terrible. So
It's a staple of the show. I'd feel bad if we didn't talk about it.
Well, next year's coming.
The thing is, it's not even the three-point shooting. Three-point shooting's terrible. And he came in with the reputation of being a three-point shooter, and he's not that by any stretch of the imagination. If you or I was as much of a high-volume three-point shooter as he is, we'd probably make just as many. He scores a lot and makes a lot because he takes a lot.
Yeah, you coach yours. You coach three-point
shooting.
Well, you got a sixth-grade team
making beyond the three-point shooting. It's the putting your head down and going in one on three. That's embarrassing. Freshmen do that. Yeah. If you're senior, shouldn't do that.
End of game mistakes.
Some of that speaks to the style of this team, and I see it more than just Cooney. I see Benajay do it too. This team, Jim, doesn't know how to run a fast break.
Yeah, really.
A fast break.
And, it makes sense.
The ball and they go barreling in, and that's their option. They hope to get to the free throw line or get an and one. I see Cooney, he's on the wing, and you could get a classic two-on-one fast break, and what does he do? He flares out so he can jack up a three.
Oh, yeah.
That's not how I teach my kids how to run a fast break, and that's not how we learned how to run a fast break. I don't know why this team has changed the rules of basketball to not run a two-on-one fast break anymore, or when the numbers aren't in your favor, to pull it out and bring your offense into play.
Oh, yeah. And in the I got to tell you, it's not just you can make the argument, Benajay's not a true point guard. They don't have a true point guard out there. And, these are Division I college basketball players. Elite players recruited at the highest level, and you're right, running a two-on-one fast break. And as far as Cooney's shooting percentage goes, I bet you if you pulled out the stats from your sixth-grade team that you just finished up your season runner-up in the league or whatever it was in Cincinnati there, I bet you that you have two or three kids shooting higher percentage or the same percentage than Trevor Cooney.
I can guarantee you that. Absolutely. From three. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Sixth graders.
Yeah. And that's pretty sad. It's pretty sad indeed when we're sold a bill of goods that this guy's such a great shooter.
You know
and he's not.
I I'm ready to put him in the past. I think that's just, you know, the Syracuse teams that don't have the great success, I think we're it's hard to feel much energy and enthusiasm for them when they get into the tournament.
Yeah, and well, you know, we're treated to such a nice run before the NCAA pulled the rug out from under us. You know, with some bad, and also some bad luck away from doing some really special things over the past 5 to 7 years, and so it's difficult when we're not, you know, in that mode, because it felt like it could last forever, and it felt so easy, and it felt like it was the system as much as it was the players. But no, it's the players. So let's quickly, that's the first topic. We got to move forward here. Second topic, do we have two games left? Are we going to lose to Pitt and then lose either in, you know, the play-in round of the NCAA tournament or the first round of the NIT? Does this team really possibly have two games left? Because that, I think it's a real possibility from what I've been seeing. They're losers of what, 5 of their last 7?
This team is not peaking right now. I know that. This is not their best version of Syracuse basketball that we've seen this season, but I don't know. You get it all becomes matchups once you get into the tournament, especially on short rest. In the NCAA tournament, in the ACC tournament, everybody kind of knows each other because you've seen each other. Pitt's not a good matchup for this team. We know that. Jamie Dixon beats the crap out of Jim Boeheim, seems like, every time they play. So I don't like that matchup whatsoever. And then if they do happen to get past Pitt, then it's North Carolina, which, again, is probably not a good matchup for this team. It'd be great if they can match up against a Duke or even a Florida State again, because I do think that was a bit fluky yesterday. But, yeah, they're sleeping in the bed that they made. That's unfortunate. They're at 8-9, and if they do lose that game, yeah, they might only have one in the postseason. If they're lucky enough to make the NCAAs, you know, it could be a play-in game. It could be a 6-11 game that they're probably going to be outmatched. You get into the NIT, they might not give a crap, and then they, you know, get bounced in the first round. It's a very real possibility. This team's got two games left this season.
Yeah, NIT game in front of 6,000 fans at the Dome. That would really be, you know, something. So let's.
Yeah, it's too bad they can't move it to Manly like they did a few years ago.
Yeah, that's no longer. Actually, just bring it to the new Carmelo Anthony Center, pull out a few bleachers, if that's the case.
That might be all they need.
Yeah.
Just for parents.
Okay, which brings me to topic three, which is, I don't know, Cuse Nation, if it's just me or if it's everybody, but I'm not enjoying college basketball as a whole this year as much. And, you know, I really didn't as much last year, too, but, you know, I was fooled into thinking it might have been the fact that, you know, the NCAA was breathing down our neck and eventually, you know, banned us from postseason. I mean, that was just a terrible year to go through as a Syracuse fan. But now this year we come back tournament eligible. We got a team that's, you know, has shown some flashes, and, you know, I can certainly get behind guys like Benajay Lydon and Malachi Richardson, and at times Tyler Roberson. But it's just, it's like I'm not anticipating the next game like I usually do. I'm not as happy or upset when we win or lose as I usually am, and I'm less inclined to turn on SportsCenter to see who won around the conference or around the country, and I'm less inclined to watch a random game. I'm more inclined actually to turn on the Golf Channel sometimes rather than, you know, watch whatever games on ESPN and or ESPN2. I mean, there's or Fox Sports. There's games all over the place, and you know, maybe it's just me. I don't know if you feel the same.
I do, and it's hard to think if maybe it's just too many things going on in the world that are distracting to a college basketball fan. Maybe it's
sure.
Different.
And we have kids right now playing rec sports that are pretty time-consuming, you know, between soccer and basketball, indoor soccer this winter and basketball, and you've coached a couple teams, I think, your daughter and son. And so, yeah, that takes a lot of time, and it forces you to miss a lot of games, but we always watch them. You know, we always tape them and watch them, but it's, I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just our demographic right now with the, you know, the rec age kids, you know.
It might be, but you pointed out something that I hadn't really occurred to me, but it, as soon as you said it resonated. And, you know, I've watched every single game, and that's the beauty of living in, you know, 2016, is I have DirecTV and I have a college basketball package. I get every single game, and even when the DVR doesn't record, I can get it on my iPad. You know, I can consume a game any way I want. I've seen every minute of every game this season.
Right.
And like you say, I haven't, you know, the losses haven't bothered me, and the wins haven't really energized me, you know, and it's a weird, weird thing. And maybe it's just the nature of this team that we just accepted that they're just a kind of an above average team this year.
Yeah,
it's a different mindset going into the game. Like, I'm not sure I care if they win or lose. It's great if they win, but if they don't, you know, there'll be another game.
Yeah, and the other part of it too is that, you know, when sometimes like in the Big East, we might have lost to like, let's say we lost to Providence or West Virginia or whatever it was, and it would really bother me because they're conference mates. But another part of me would be like, well, that's actually, you know, that's a good win for West Virginia, and they're on the bubble right now. So there's this whole other dynamic where I don't really care this year. I mean, I don't even think about it on that level. And sadly, as a guy who hosts a basketball podcast right now, you know, if you ask me, where's everybody in the ACC kind of stand and is their tournament status, I'd have to probably pull up some standings and, you know, to make sure to double check myself. Where back in the, when we were in the Big East, I would, you know every Big East team that had a possibility of making the tournament and be watching their results and seeing how many Big East teams we could get in there. Because if we got 9 and the ACC got 5, well, that was a great year regardless of what Syracuse did. So that whole thing is pulled away, and there's also for me, I think, a subconscious feeling that things are just kind of, we're set up to fail in the ACC. And we'll talk about Boston College at the end of this show, and we can talk about the other Big East programs that have had zero success in the ACC. And an ACC guy will say, well, geez, that's because you couldn't compete in a real league, when I think that we're set up to fail. And I haven't really spent time to look at this analytically too closely other than to look at the records overall and performances of all the Big East teams in football and basketball that went from the Big East to the ACC. So am I crazy?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to disagree a little bit on being set up to fail, only because and I know there's this bias of Carolina and Duke, but I just don't think this is as good a team as what Syracuse had in the Big East. It just isn't. And if it was, then I think this team would compete, and we would probably feel a little bit stronger about how they're representing themselves in the conference. But it, like you say, we're not emotionally invested in this league, and I doubt we ever will be. And we've been saying that for years.
Yeah.
In the Big East, we were emotionally invested in it. We loved them or hated them. We were passionate about all the Big East teams, at least all the original ones and some of the ones that came after, too. We don't care about these teams. I don't care about Carolina or Duke or Virginia or Georgia Tech or Clemson or, Florida State. I don't care about any of these teams. Whether they make it or not, I could care less. And I don't think there are too many Syracuse fans that do, honestly. If so, then they're probably new to the game, and they aren't really to the point where they've grown up with a different league in the Big East that they, you know, loved and cared about, and this league we don't love and care about. So that's made it difficult to have much emotion over what's going on. But I think it's just – I think the lack of success, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, I think we're just sort of – I don't know, we're sort of beaten down by it a little bit.
Yeah, and it's conference tournament – week, you know, this should be big. If this was Big East Championship week, we'd be giddy right now. And just, you know, we would be excited. We're going to talk about the ACC tournament and our matchups in the brackets and all that in a second here, but just really giddy about
it. On a noon, a first round game at noon on a, you know, a conference tournament week, 5 years ago, we couldn't wait for that game.
Yeah, at Madison Square Garden.
Now, it's like, yeah. I may go out to lunch and watch it, or I may just, you know, refresh my you know, follow my feed on my Twitter, and that's how I follow it, you know, and I'll watch it later. it's a weird mindset now.
Well, let's get off of that topic and move it on now to just a quick check of our NCAA resume. We talked briefly before the show started. You think we're in win or lose against Pitt. I think we need to beat Pitt to get in. One thing that's really helping a resume is good old St. Bonaventure up to 27 in the RPI now, to go along with Texas A&M at 21, Duke at 18, and Notre Dame at 36. Those are our four top 50 RPI wins. And UConn was in there, but they dropped out, so that win's not looking as good. And the rest are a bunch of losses. So unless I'm missing somebody, I think those are our only four wins versus RPI top 50 right now.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, the resume is decent. You know, there's no top 10 RPI wins, unfortunately. That would be nice to have on the resume. I just think, they talked about it, how the losses when Coach Boeheim was suspended, those will be discounted in a way. And I'm convinced that this team is in, win or lose against Pitt. And just because I think that it would be a just reward for this team to end up in a play-in game for the tournament, because that would say you're on the body of work, you're good enough to make it.
But prove it, though.
Only because you had this situation happen to you mid-season, and that's why we'll throw you this bone of the play-in game. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you wouldn't have made it. You know, to me, that sort of feels like that's the tournament committee would be, you know, where their heads would be on it.
Well, you know, the playing game isn't all that bad of a deal. You win, and you get an extra day, I guess, to prepare for your opponent. Well, actually, they get just as much time, but they got another game in between. I know you'd get an extra day. Well,
you get an extra day. I think it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, and if you play on the Tuesday, you're playing Thursday. If you play on the Wednesday, you're playing Friday. So you would never play back-to-back days. But you know, you when you're one of the at-larges that make that game, you're going in probably as a 12 seed, and the 12-5 game is one the 12s have very historically very good success in. I don't think I would much rather Syracuse go in the play-in game and win as a 12 seed, and then have to play a 5 and then a 4 and then don't play a 1 until the Sweet 16, and go in as an 8 or a 9, and then you're playing the 1 in the second round if you happen to beat an 8, win the 8-9 game. I don't want to play a 1 seed in the second round.
Right. Yeah, true. And if we shoot moderately well from 3-point range and play good defense, then we can beat pretty much anybody, you know, that's a 4 seed or lower, like you said there.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree with that. Yeah, I think best case scenario is they lose the Pit and make the play-in game, honestly. And plus, selfishly, because it's up the road in Dayton, and I'd go watch it.
Well, that'll be interesting. We'll get your media credentials for that one from Finger Lakes One.
Yeah, courtside.
So,
with my NCAA-branded cup in hand.
So that'll be a week from tonight. We'll know, and we'll be back here. We'll talk about on our annual Selection Sunday, you know, special edition of the Upstate Orange podcast. But first things first, ACC tournament week. And I can pull the bracket up here right now for us to take a look at. And you got the three teams with a bye: North Carolina, Notre Dame, Virginia, and Miami. And then down there at the bottom is Clemson, Georgia Tech, Florida State, BC, the 14th seed, and Virginia Tech. And then up here in Syracuse's bracket is, you got NC State, Wake Forest to play Duke, and then you have Syracuse and Pitt to play North Carolina. And you're talking two noon games. Syracuse usually isn't very good at noon, let alone playing Pitt and North Carolina. What you like our chances to make it out of this bracket? Are we done, you know, on day one or two? I mean, I'd have to think we're done on day one or two. I don't have faith. I'm sorry.
So here's what I do like. I don't like playing Pitt, but it's a game they can win. You know, I think their talent-wise is going to match up. It's just the physicality that Pitt brings. That's always a difficult thing for Syracuse. But if they did happen to get past Pitt, Carolina doesn't take this tournament seriously. Roy Williams has almost outwardly said he disdains this tournament and doesn't really care. And as a result, Carolina hasn't had great success in this tournament under Roy Williams. I would love to see Syracuse play North Carolina with a North Carolina team that sort of is lukewarm about being there in the first place.
At noon on Thursday, yeah.
Than play a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That's a good situation for Syracuse. So they got past Pitt and beat North Carolina. Then you're playing probably either Notre Dame or Duke, teams that Syracuse has beaten this year, both of them.
True. Yeah.
You know, they make a run. They get to the finals of this tournament. Now you're looking at probably a 6 seed.
Oh, easily. Because of the wins we would have accumulated, we would have beat North Carolina and then either Notre Dame or Duke likely. So,
right.
So yeah, I think we would hop right up there. But
it's better than if they had to play Virginia or even Miami. Miami beat them pretty decisively earlier in the season. Virginia, that was a close game. I actually watched that game this weekend because I hadn't seen it. I had it recorded, and Virginia's, they're just a stronger team. Syracuse hung with them, but that's a game that I wouldn't want to play if I was a Syracuse player. I would want to see Virginia again if I didn't have to.
So who do you like coming out the bottom of this ACC tournament bracket? You got a 2-seed Virginia and a 3-seed Miami. It's, if you go by brand recognition, this is like the consolation bracket compared to the top. But,
I mean, Virginia's they're a solid, solid team.
Yeah.
Miami's been playing great. They've, that'll be a difficult game. Those teams are identical right now, both 24-6, 13-5. I mean, they are almost to a T, the same team practically. But they're both well coached. We'll see how Miami lost to Virginia Tech pretty badly this weekend. We'll see how that affects them because they beat Virginia last week or 2 weeks ago. Beat Louisville, won at Notre Dame. So Miami's been playing really, really well, but somehow stubbed the toe against Virginia Tech. I don't know how that's going to affect them. But, they do seem to be able to match up against UVA.
Yeah, well, there it is. Looking at the schedule real quick. Kicks off Tuesday night, Wake Forest, NC State at noon, BC at versus Florida State 2 o'clock, which I guess they got to have those games early to give them rest for the next game, but... And there's probably other smaller conference championships that are championship games that'll be in prime time. But man, what a terrible atmosphere that's going to be for those.
Although playing noon on a Tuesday,
Wake and NC State. Although it's in Washington D.C., so you're not even going to draw those North Carolina, locals.
No, and let's be honest. That's a good thing for Syracuse, especially if they could get past Pitt to play Carolina. They'll have the decided home court advantage. They're comfortable in that arena, very comfortable in that arena, and they will probably have more people in the building.
Yeah. Well, it's happening. ACC tournament week. So that's our Big Five topics. It's about getting close to 8:30, so we're right on tap for Connor's Corner Trivia. Brad, what do you got this week for Orange Trivia for us?
Well, I wanted to keep the conference tournament theme because we're coming up on the ACC tournament. Unfortunately, Syracuse doesn't have great history in the ACC tournament. They don't have much history at all, and that which they have isn't very good. So let's go back to their Big East tournament because we don't talk about the Big East tournament. When was the last time Syracuse won the Big East tournament?
That would be the year that Jerry McNamara... No, once after that. I was going to say the year Jerry McNamara went off. They had to win it again since then. They lost it the year that they beat UConn in 6 overtimes with Johnny Flynn. Didn't they come back the year after that and win it in overtime against West Virginia in the final? That would have been, 2008?
Incorrect.
I know the year I went down there, Brandon Trisha's senior year, they lost to Cincinnati in the semis. I went down for the semis in the finals, and we were favored against Cincinnati. We lost. That was the last year of the Big East. No, it wasn't. Second to last
year.
That
was 2012.
Yeah.
They lost in the semis to Cincinnati.
Yeah, and we actually showed up to watch Cincinnati-Louisville in the finals, and I was like, man, what could be worse?
Yeah, great.
Yeah. Yeah, so it must have been sometime in between there, but I'm really not placing it. Onuwaku got hurt by Georgetown. Onuwaku's junior year is my guess.
Onuwaku's junior year would have been 2008.
Oh, wow. So, yeah.
Is that right? I'm trying to think. Yeah, Onuwaku Jr. was 2008. No, I'm sorry, 2009. In 2009, that was 6 overtimes.
Rick Jackson's senior year? No.
Rick Jackson's senior year was the next year. No.
You know what?
Jackson Senior was 2011. They lost in the semis.
Man, I can't. I seem to remember us beating West Virginia in overtime to win the Big East tournament.
So in the last time that this team won the Big East tournament, 2006, the Jerry McNamara run.
Oh, so it was G-Mac's run. Wow, we haven't won since then. That's great.
The year they won prior to that was 2005. So they won back-to-back, and they beat West Virginia in the finals that year.
Okay.
That's, I think, the one you were thinking of.
Yeah, it's so long ago that it has escaped me. It's hard to believe it was that long ago.
Yeah.
2007?
2006 and 2005, back-to-back.
6 and 5, okay.
You know, and you want to talk about writing a legacy? The fact that Jerry McNamara led this team to two Big East tournament championships
right.
back-to-back years as a junior and a senior, and, you know, let's be fair, Team Warwick had something to do with that in his senior year. But, yeah, that's writing a pretty good legacy, especially in 2006 as a 9 seed, you know, winning the 8-9 game with a last-second shot against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Winning the next round against the number 1 seed UConn, again, with a late heroics.
It was so
Georgetown,
long ago.
Which is always something we love to see.
Yeah, that was so long ago.
And then being Pitt in the finals.
My daughter was...
Four great wins in 4 days. I mean, great wins.
Yeah, my daughter's 1 year old. Now she's 10.
Yeah, 10 years ago. How crazy is that to think about that was 10 years ago?
I know it, man. Oh, well.
So when was the last time Syracuse had a number 1 seed in the Big East... Or ACC tournament, for that matter.
ACC tournament. No, they weren't number 1 seed a couple years ago when they weren't a 1 seed. No, never a 1 seed in the ACC tournament. 1 seed in the Big East tournament was the year Onuwaku got hurt. That Routwins Onuwaku team.
Well, Matt, that was the year you were there.
Yeah. Yeah, figure go down there in the semis and get a couple of Cuse games and you get one stinker.
Yeah, they went to that Big East tournament with one loss.
Oh, yeah, one loss on the season. That, you know, we were riding under...
Loss on the season.
Yeah.
Number 1 in the country. Oh, I'm sorry, number 2 in the country. They couldn't get back to number 1. I think there was a dominant Kentucky team that year. Number 2 in the country, and they lost to Onuwaku, and then they lost to UC. Then they went into the tournament, lost to Ohio State in the Elite Eight. Which school played the most Big East tournament games?
Obviously, originally.
And this doesn't count the new era of the Big East, which is, doesn't even count in my mind.
Right. I'm going to say Pittsburgh. No, I'm not going to, because they came into the league. Well, it was only 2 years after it started, right?
I believe that's right, 2 years after they started.
I'm still going to say Pitt.
No, Pitt played in the fifth most games in the history of that conference tournament.
For a while there in the late 90s, early 2000s, they were in the final like every year, right?
No, it was crazy. Like 6 out of 8 years, I think they were in the finals. And they only won it, I think, once of all that.
Well, then I would have to say either Syracuse, Georgetown, or UConn. UConn, an original Big East member.
They were, but...
I'm going to say Syracuse.
UConn before Jim Calhoun was terrible.
Yeah, Earl Kelly. Syracuse.
Yeah, Don Perno was their coach, I think,
that's
before
right.
Calhoun. They never did much before he was there, or before Calhoun was there.
Yeah. Although I did see a Syracuse-UConn triple, maybe quadruple overtime game with Earl Kelly as point guard in the dome for UConn.
I remember one of those games, yeah.
I think Pearl was our point guard. Maybe it was before Pearl. But I'm going to say Syracuse.
You'd be correct. Syracuse played 79 Big East tournament games from 1980 through 2013. Next most is Georgetown with 78, one fewer.
Hmm. Yeah, good for us.
There's two others that played in more than Pitt. I said Pitt was fifth.
I'd say UConn
UConn's one,
and Villanova.
Two games.
Villanova.
So Villanova played more games than UConn in the history of that tournament.
Yeah. Well, like you said early on, they weren't that great. Villanova was always was never down.
No, Villanova was always solid in this league. I don't think they ever in that league. Not this one, that one. Yeah. Villanova never really had too many down stretches, really.
Okay.
Who had the most losses in the history of the Big East, tournament? You had to think logically about that one.
Yeah, if you play more games, you're going to... Look, everybody's losing a game except for the champion, right? So, with that being said, well, also, there was a time when some teams didn't even get to go for a few years, remember?
Yeah.
So
the reason why Virginia Tech only played in two Big East tournament games ever.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
I don't know how long they were in the league, but their history in the Big East tournament is 1-1, which means they only made it 1 year.
That's just crazy. So, and yeah, because they won one and then lost one.
Right.
Yeah. So you can't normally
never
you can't
played in it again.
You can't just but you can't
bad.
You can't lose more than one Big East tournament game a year.
Right. Exactly. It's not a double elimination.
So it would have to be
unlike DePaul. DePaul's again not counting the last couple of years when in the new Big East. DePaul's history in the Big East tournament was they're 1-6. So they made it six times and lost. When one and done, 5 out of those 6 years.
So it's got to be an original member that never won it, and I'm going to say our good friends at Boston College.
Incorrect, because they left too soon.
Oh, well, then I'm going to say our good friends at Providence College.
Providence College is correct.
Because Seton Hall won it.
Another school.
Because Seton Hall won the tournament before. St. John's won the tournament before. Right? Am I correct? It's not either one of those teams?
It's not St. John's and it's not Seton Hall.
So another original Big East member who has never won it?
So you may be overthinking it a little bit on that. So you remember you were saying that there was a time when teams didn't make it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it could be another team. Well, you know, at this point, I think we're getting close to possibly being Syracuse. If we played them,
that's not too far off. So Syracuse is actually fourth most losses in the history of the tournament.
So it could be Georgetown or Villanova. Villanova. Villanova never won it.
Villanova's correct. Now I think Villanova did win it.
Yeah.
I think Kerry Kittle's team won it.
Yeah, but that was like it. They hardly ever won it. We've won how many?
Right.
Five. We won five of them.
Right. So Villanova's in Villanova's history in the Big East tournament, they were 33-32. So on average, they win one, lose one every year.
Hmm.
Now the reason I think that they're tied with Providence, I think there were years where Providence didn't make it at all. They
yes,
were so bad.
Absolutely, which had to be just an absolute stunner to the folks in Providence, who they're not going to the Big East tournament. Providence.
Yeah, the Trangizi group. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, was the dumbest thing that was ever done to say that you're not going to invite your whole conference to the conference tournament. I'm sorry, I never agreed with that.
Why not just play a couple extra games? You're going to make ticket revenue. Why not?
And they did, and they were terrible, boring, Tuesday night games, just like these playing games for the ACC tournament are going to be. But they actually, drew a little interest. To me, it was like, watch some Big East basketball in the Garden on a Tuesday night, instead of not watching it.
Right. What other better options would you have on a Tuesday night in the 80s than watching Big East basketball?
The league just got too big, we tried to expand to accommodate football and we kept all our Catholic school basketball. I still say that if Boston College stayed in the Big East, that the Big East stayed intact. I don't think the Miami loss was what killed us. It was the BC defection. As crappy as they are and how as inconsequential they should be, that was what gave the ACC a footprint in the Big East geographical territory,
They cease to become a league entirely in the Southeast.
In case anybody's wondering why I hate BC so much.
There's a lot of reasons, but that's one.
Yeah, I think we could have survived the Virginia Tech, the Miami, but when BC went, everybody, one of the original members, were they original?
They were.
Yeah, I get confused sometimes because, they started it, and then the next year they added a team or two, and then they next year they had a, I think Pitt. And anyways, yeah, that's pretty good trivia. Any more?
No, that's all I got. I like talking about the Big East tournament, but I can't think of too much else of the Big East tournament.
Yeah,
makes me sad.
A lot of people are probably watching and say, "Why the heck are they talking about this Big East tournament? Those days are over." but yeah, that's interesting. And it was the one with the most losses was a little bit of a brain teaser, so I liked it.
Yeah, you had to think logically about that one.
So hey,
Syracuse with the most games, not the most wins. Unfortunately, Georgetown has one more win than Syracuse. Georgetown was 51-27. Syracuse 50-29.
Well, that's because they got screwed by the refs in 1984.
Michael Graham punched Andre Hawkins.
Yeah.
The better team didn't win.
Yep.
They had through a chair.
That's the difference, was that stupid game.
Yep.
Okay. Two for the row. We just got done talking about Boston College, so might as well point out that the BC Eagles became the, I think since 1944, or maybe all time, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's since 1944, the only major conference Division I program to lose every single conference football game and every single conference basketball game. Boston College Athletics, catch the fever.
I can't wait to see all those alumni doling out money to the athletic department after a year like that. Holy cow.
So how's the ACC's life working out in the ACC for Boston College, who, you know, the new framework of the ACC kind of fits them in there, but, you know, they were Big East. They were Northeast. We were a Northeast Conference. And, and people,
it's got to be difficult for them to have recruited to the ACC when,
sure,
you know, they're a geographic school that the New England guys don't want to play their games in Florida and Georgia and South Carolina for their whole 4 years. You know, that's a hard thing.
Nor does your fan base really want to come out and watch those games, whereas they're coming out for Providence. You know, they're coming out for UConn and Seton Hall and Syracuse. Now, what a joke the crowd was at the Conte Forum when Syracuse was there this year. It's just, what a joke terrible Boston College Athletics is, really. And I'm not afraid to say it.
They're good at hockey, and they play a very regional schedule in hockey, and that's where a lot of the top hockey programs are in the Northeast, obviously. And they're probably more of a hockey school than they are anything else. I mean, the Bean Pot that they play up there with BU and Harvard, and that's a great event, and BC's right in that. But boy, they can't do something like that for basketball. Nobody's gonna care at all.
Yeah, let alone football, where they have a little more marginal of a following. But BC basketball, just the worst. And you want to go through some Big East history about teams that never won anything in the Big East? How about Boston College? No BC Big East tournament championships, no Final Fours on behalf of the Big East, and one co-league title, maybe regular season.
If that, the Bill Curley teams might have done one. I mean, Michael Adams, those teams were good.
But they were, there was
the heyday of the Big East, and they still were second fiddle to Georgetown, Syracuse, St. John's, Villanova. The Jared Dudley teams, the Craig Smith teams, I mean, those were solid teams. I don't think you saw any teams that were top 10, but they were decent. But yeah, I mean, that's what they've got to hang their hats on, really.
Well, interesting to point out a new low mark in the history of Boston College athletics. And
you thought it couldn't get any lower as a BC fan. You were proven wrong.
Hey, basically, make a stand. At the time BC left, the Big East schools had made an agreement that they were going to stand together. And then Miami went, and BC got feeling their oats and thinking they were, you know, more, I don't know what they were thinking, but off they go. And that just sets the dominoes falling that results in us now being a member of the ACC, which is, everybody says it's so great, you know, and all the money we're making. But look what's happened to Boston College. They've just gone down the toilet and everything. And
it's always been football driven, but, and their football's had marginal success. This year they've fallen on, you know, hardest times there are. I mean, if you can't win a game in the ACC, you're not even trying.
The history of Boston College, you got the Doug Flutie, win, and then you got like one or two upsets in Notre Dame. That's there. I just recited the complete history of Boston College football to you.
That's about right.
You know? So it just, it bothers me that they were the ones that left that of the original, you know, the original eight.
It's true. It's unfortunate. That's where we can point to.
Well, you're listening to another edition of the Remembering the Big East podcast on FingerLakes1.com. Okay, two for the road here. ACC tournament. Honest predictions here on this Pitt game. I know what you said about them beating North Carolina if we get the chance, but I don't think we're going to beat Pitt. Why would I? Pitt manhandled us twice. It's tough to beat anybody three times in the same season, but let's face facts. Jamie Dixon owns Boeheim, and Pittsburgh owns Syracuse more than any school in the whole country, and that's who we got first round. So I say we lose, and I don't usually say that lightly. If the glass is a quarter full, I think it's more than half full when it comes to predicting Syracuse games. But I don't see it. I think we lose.
You know, I'm going to take the opposite. I'm going to say they win this game.
Okay.
Because I think there's a sense, I think, among that group that it's us against the world. And as much as, you know, we expect Trevor Cooney, or we always sort of half did, to, you know, be a Jerry McNamara type, I don't think this team needs it. I think this is when Vinajay steps up and goes John Wallace on this team and puts a team on their shoulders. Now, I'm not predicting a national championship by any means, but I think you're going to see the Mike Vinajay that hit 34 points the other night, and not the Trevor Cooney that goes 4 for 16 from the field. You know, I think this is when he shows his leadership chops and says, "Look, Trevor, you got to stop shooting threes.
Give me the ball.
Put the game in my hands. I'll win this game for us." And you know, he'll distribute it. He'll get Richardson far more involved, Lydon far more involved. I think if they can limit Cooney's touches, I think this team wins this game.
If they can limit Cooney's touches. It sounds like the other team's game plan.
Point guard, if you're Mike Vinajay and you're the point guard on this team, you have the ability to limit somebody's touches. You do.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree with that.
If he's a smart player and he realizes his career is at stake, you do what you got to do, you know?
Yeah, but even that, saying that you know, we need a guy to freeze out another one of our teammates for us to win, it's crazy. So, yeah, I got us losing. I hope you're right. I can, you know, I can see us winning, but, you know, if I'm...
No, I got this team beating Pitt, and I've got them beating Carolina because Carolina doesn't care. I've got them beating Notre Dame because Notre Dame's not very good, and then I've got them losing to UVA in the finals. How about that?
That would be a great weekend.
This team goes in as a sixth seed next week. How about that?
Yeah,
put that up on the board.
It's posted. Yeah, I like hearing that. You got me a little bit more excited than I was just a few moments ago for this ACC tournament.
Good. Running on a high this week.
Yeah, well, hey, good show again, Brad. Maybe, who knows what we'll be talking about, but next week we'll probably be coming back, I would say 9 o'clock because of we got the brackets coming out at 6-something and, you know, a little time to digest it, and then we'll come back. Who knows who we'll have up here. In the past, we've had some, you know, a lot of people up here. So far, every single episode has been just me and you, Brad, which has been fine by me, but we miss some of our friends that usually come up. But maybe Selection Sunday will bring them out.
I don't know. My parents like hearing me more, so that's fine. Either way.
So, yeah, another good one, Brad. We'll see how many we have left.
Hopefully, we've got quite a few.
So thanks for joining us on the Upstate Orange podcast. We'll be back again, like I said, next Sunday night at 9 o'clock with another edition of the Upstate Orange podcast. You can subscribe to our feed on iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube, or via RSS. We're online at www.fingerlakes1.tv/UpstateOrange. So for the Professor Brad Connor, I'm Jim Sinacropi. Have a great conference championship week, and come on, let's go Orange!